Hey, it's me, Brian Reeves. Have you ever considered working with a coach? Like maybe you've achieved success on the outside, but deep fulfillment is still missing inside? Or you're confronted with a massive challenge or choice in your life? Or your relationships aren't as fulfilling as you want them to be? Or maybe you're just tired of trying to figure life out all by yourself? Well, I invite you to apply for private one-on-one coaching with me. Since 2012, I've helped 1,000 men and women like you break through hidden barriers, deepen their relationships, especially the relationship with themselves, and step more fully into the life they were meant to live. Coaching isn't about getting advice. It's about deep transformation so that you can really hear and trust the wisdom and clarity already always within you. I only take on a few clients at a time, and I only work with men and women truly ready to do the work. So if you're up for an inner adventure as a pathway to meaningful change in your outer world, go to brianreeves.com/coaching, click an application link on that page to apply. That's Brian Reeves, Brian with a Y, reeves.com/coaching. The breakthrough you need could begin today. All right, let's get into today's episode.
You do this process that I take them through, and I swear, Brian, magic occurs. They integrate. They're no longer at war with themselves on the inside. They've come to, and in this state of presence is wisdom.
Yeah.
Courage, not strength. Courage, any idiot can hit their head against the wall. That's strength. Courage is an open heart. That's a different story. So it's awareness, it's wisdom, it's courage, and it's healthy humility. Where you can, going back to the beginning of this conversation, own your shit 100% without justification. Because if your worth is still based on looking good, being right, being safe, getting, controlling, any of that, you can't fully own it. But when you've integrated this and you have kind of brought home little ashamed Alana, little bravado Alana, and everybody's home and everybody's in presence, you're whole. You're not perfect. No one's ever going to be perfect, but you're whole. So there's nothing to justify. There's no excuses to give. You don't need to be one-upping anybody, nor do you need to apologize for your existence.
Welcome to Men This Way. I've got a great episode for you today. I'm talking with my dear friend, intimacy coach and expert, and just all-around lovely human being, Alana Pratt. And we're talking about presence. Whatever does that mean? I know so many men, we get the feedback often from an intimate partner, I just don't feel your presence, or I don't feel connected to you, or it's like you're really not here. Like these are some of the things that we may hear sometimes, and we have no idea what our partners are talking about because I'm right here. So I invited Alana on to explore and talk about presence from a woman's perspective. Tate is sitting this one out today. He'll be back in the next episode. Now, Alana has a new online course for singles called Becoming the One, in which she helps show you how to stop looking for the one and learn instead how to actually become the one, become the love you're looking for. I think this is essential work on one's relationship journey. That approach was certainly foundational for me leading up to meeting my wife, Sylvie, learning how to, in many ways, just be the love that I was seeking, be the man that would attract the kind of woman I was seeking. We attract what we radiate. I really believe that that's true. And Alana's course can help you learn how to heal the wounded heart that's been programmed to unwittingly repel healthy intimacy and instead learn how to attract conscious connection and deeply satisfying love. A long time now, she's a brilliant intimacy coach who knows her shit. And she's appeared in Forbes, on People Magazine. She's done the rounds on all the major TV networks, TLC, iHeartRadio, and more. So if you're looking for a partner to do life with and want to break old unhelpful patterns, go get her course at Alana Pratt. It's Alana with two L's and one N, A-L-L-A-N-A, Pratt, PRATT.com/become. Intro. This is her introductory course to Become the One. AlanaPratt.com/become intro. And you can get a discount using my name as the discount code, Brian with a Y, B-R-Y-A-N. I'm not actually sure what discount you get, but the course is only like $60. Anyway, AlanaPratt.com/become intro code Brian. Alana drops all kinds of wisdom nuggets and insights in this episode. She truly is a brilliant coach on intimacy, and I'm really excited to share her with you, with my audience. Again, Tate will be here with us next week. Now I invite you to simply take a deep breath and dive into presence with us in this episode of Men This Way. All right, let's dive. Miss Alana Pratt. Wow. What's up? How are you? So good to have you on Men This Way. Long time coming, isn't it?
It is. 70 great men in your glorious goddess wife. This is the biggest privilege ever. Thank you. Our deep friendship, our colleague relationship, and our aligned, you know, desire to support men. It is such an honor to be here. Just listening to that intro already brought tears to my eyes. Thank you, Brian, for all the great work you do and for being a great man. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Alana. Well, you know, when I conceived this podcast, I conceived this was a place where men, we could come together and have wisdom conversations, essentially, because I think that's lacking in the world of men. Wise men are lacking. I've been well aware for all the few years that I've been doing this now that there is a voice missing. At the same time, there the world of women, there's so much richness and wisdom available in the world of women that we men need to be exposed to. Mm. And so, you know, I'm just delighted, and I want you to know that for me, it's a great privilege to have you.
Oh, so, thank you. It means the world to me. I'm reminded of the very first time I even thought about talking to men. Eben Pagan, you know, David D'Angelo, Double Your Dating, asked me to be on his series, Double Your Dating. I'd never even spoken about men before. I had still tremendous daddy wounds. I was going through, at that point, like a 13-year custody battle. Mm. And what came through, which is not anything that a man can provide a man, but it's a piece that I believe the feminine can, is I started to go into this spontaneous apology for when we women leave our heart and go into our head and are afraid and emasculate. I've done it. I've witnessed many do it. There's no condoning of that behavior. I'm not saying that's okay in the slightest, but I just wanted to explain to the men why we did it and then apologize. And that when there isn't, we want to talk about the power of presence today, right? So when there isn't that presence, my experience is that I'm falling into a cliff of off a cliff into the void of hell. Like I surrendered to him. He had me, he had my back. I'm opening. I'm blossoming. I'm radiant. I'm creative. I'm all these, oh God, he's not there. Oh God, I fell off the cliff. Oh God, I'm falling into the pit of hell. And if one is not on the conscious path and isn't aware that this is happening, it's just natural to close your heart. It's just natural to kill before you get killed. It's just natural to become the masculine yourself. And I wanted to explain to the gentleman in that, you know, podcast, you know, years ago, maybe a decade ago now, I'm sorry. That doesn't excuse the behavior of being a bitch. I'm sorry. And something changed in my forgiveness of my mom, forgiveness of my dad, forgiveness of my ex, all the things. And also it allowed these men who had never been able to hear anything after that moment, after you've been emasculated, like then the guy shuts down, the guy closes his heart. Now we've got two closed hearts who can't talk to each other and we've got perpetual patterns of conflict. But there was something that happened and all of a sudden all these men came to start working with me. I work with men, women, and couples now, but at the time, and they've just said, wow, I played that episode like 14 times. No one's ever apologize. My mom never apologized. Right. And I've had my heart closed with armor over it for decades. So thank you.
You know, you're speaking to something that is, I think, really invaluable and important for men to hear. When I work with couples, this is one of the challenges that I have, because we got to start somewhere in terms of, you know, what thread do we start pulling on and to support the challenges this couple is going through. And oftentimes we start with, you know, in a heterosexual dynamic, we're oftentimes looking at the man's behavior because it's often, again, not always, but often his female partner who's bringing up the upset. And I'm very mindful. I'm often telling couples, I don't believe in 50-50 relationships. I believe in 100-100 relationships, right? Uh-huh. You both have 100% responsibility for what's happening, for where this goes.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of the things I think a lot of men feel aggrieved and confused and angry, and they don't know how to articulate it. And they just know at the same time, there is an injustice happening to them as well.
Yeah.
And yet it's their behavior that's being focused on.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, your awareness and capacity to articulate that apology and that ownership, that means to me, that's the 100% of a woman's role in the dynamic, that closing of her heart and acting out of that closure. And again, while understandable, I think I said this to a couple just the other day. Look, if you want to figure out whose fault this is, there was a couple, they've been together 17 years and we're 30 minutes into our session and they get into one of those. Yeah, well, you did this. Yeah, but I only did that because you did this. And I had to remind them, look, if you really want to get to whose fault this is, we're going to have to go all the way back to Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
Because just trace it back. There's a cause and effect for just chicken or egg, which came first. I don't know. We got to go all the way back to the beginning to figure that out.
Yeah. 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 Taking 100% ownership is a big deal.
So
that's the work, right?
And I think that's just, it's so important. And hopefully that men listening and women as well that are listening, you know, can really hear that and take that in. Again, it doesn't absolve us men of our 100%.
Right.
I mean, that's the key here. It's like, anyway, we're going to dive into presence, what that means. I'm really excited for that. I'd like to, you know, I read more of your formal bio in the intro and why I personally wanted to have you on Men This Way, but I'd love for you to share with our listeners a little bit more about you, let them get to know you a little bit more. And to do that, you know, when I have men on the program, I will ask them to share a story about, you know, an early experience that helped shape who they are as a man today. Mm. And so I'd like to ask you the same, to tell us a little story about maybe some of the early forces in your life or a significant event or experience, but you know, bring us into what helped shape who you have become as a woman.
Mm, thank you. So the first image that comes up is I'm 5 years old. I'm in the living room. I'm spinning around the ottoman like a little Sufi. And the big stereo, like, you know, the big humongous furniture stereos was blaring, yeah. Jesus Christ, Superstar. And I was just in my bliss zone. Mm-hmm. And I guess I did not hear my dad say quiet down, because all I heard was a fist through the drywall. Mm. And in that moment, all I know is I left my body and I was terrified. In reflection, I made it mean a lot of things. Men aren't safe. I'm not safe. My expression is wrong. All these things, right? So we could call that the permanent, like the permakegel that began, that never let go. And I went into trauma 4, like hypervigilance. And in trauma 4, what I've learned, because I've gone to therapy for 20 years and I've studied and I am a master coach for 20 years. I'm always a student and a teacher. And what I've learned is that when one gets, we could say PTSD, gets stuck, and it doesn't have to be from war. It can be from a moment like that. It could simply be something that happened that was just too big to process in the moment. We couldn't process it and we get stuck. And I was stuck in this hypervigilance of, I got to be 3 steps ahead. So the abuser doesn't kill me off.
Mm-hmm.
And so my only vision was, where's the abuser so he doesn't kill me? Where's the abuser so he doesn't kill me? I wasn't looking for, where's my noble knight? My hypervigilance just kept attracting abusers to survive. But I didn't know that consciously. That was unconsciously, subconsciously running my first divorce, my second divorce, you know, my custody battle, like all the things, right? But my soul knew to go towards intimacy, go towards vulnerability, go towards back in the body, go towards feeling. So I was being led by my soul while my body was still stuck in this trauma, unhealed wound behavior. Mm-hmm. Show up 16 years old out at the lake, my best friend James and Carlene, they're coming out to the lake. I'm so excited. And Carlene walks down the stairs and she says, James is dead. And they play jokes on me all the time. And it's just going to be another joke until I see her parents walk up behind her. I'm like, oh shit, this is real. I mean, my cat hadn't even died. Nobody died. I remember running up the stairs, and we lived right, a cabin on the water, right beside a highway. And I began running down the yellow line, looking at the top of the pine trees, just screaming, no. And if I could just keep screaming, it wouldn't be real. I wasn't aware that there were, you know, 70 mile an hour cars screaming by me, my girlfriend chasing me. There's been a death. There's been a death. And the next thing I remember is no more cars. It's all quiet. And my dad is walking down the yellow line. My dad, the drunk, stoned, inappropriate guy, the one who put the fist through the wall when I was five, and lots of other behavior since then. So not somebody I trusted. But there he was walking down the yellow line, and he put his hands on my shoulders, and he goes, and he shook me, and he goes, look, if this is it, let's get off. We live forever. You will see your friend again. What? My dad, the stone drunk, is spiritual? Walked me off the highway, and he literally awoke this whole other dynamic of spirituality to me. And that evening, it was a clear blue night sky, clear glass lake. And there were two rainbows right over my cabin that night, not a cloud in the sky. And I knew they were sent from my friend. And I believe they were sent as a choice, like two rainbows, not one, two. We can choose when life throws us a curveball to close our heart, get bitter, disconnect from God, blame God, play it safe. Or we can be grateful for the times we've had, the experiences we've had, the lessons we've learned, and we can choose to keep our heart open, learn how to keep our heart open in the face of anything. And I chose the second path. And that's literally become my life path of how the hell do we learn to stay in our body, feel, be present, keep our heart open in the face of anything. And that's my mission.
Wow. Boy, there's so much in what you've just shared, and I think for many men, I mean that particularly around intimate relationship, that same choice of cynicism, between cynicism and keeping an open heart, willing to feel the heartbreak and the grief and go through it, exists for all of us men. And I think intimate relationship brings us to that precipice often. You know, it's either cynical, okay, life sucks, women suck, women are assholes, women are whatever. Sure. Or wow, this is hard and this hurts and this is painful, but shit, I'm committed to, I want to have a great love, I want to have a great relationship, and yeah. Oh man, okay, I'll sit in this fire and I'll keep going through it. And I think, you know, that's a big choice. And I think to continue choosing, as you've shared, to continue choosing the path of the open heart of it's the courageous path, because it requires your willingness to feel pain.
Yes. Yes. But if we close ourselves to feeling, we don't feel the other side of pain, which is pleasure.
Yeah.
Right. How can we experience the evolutionary, like, quality of forgiveness if you haven't been betrayed in the first place?
You know, and let's build a bridge to our conversation around presence today, because I'm also really struck by the experience you shared when you were 5 years old, your dad putting his fist through the wall when you were just celebrating, you're in your joy,
totally,
fully enjoying your body, enjoying the music, enjoying the moment, just lit up.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, I don't work individually with women so much these days. I'm more really focusing on men.
Yeah.
And but when I was working with women more, I would so often hear of childhood stories of, you know, dad didn't like it when me and my sister laughed at the dinner table. He would get angry when we were laughing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a woman very close to me, her father, you know, she would make faces and she was goofy as a little girl, and her father would knuckle her on the head when she was just having, you know, giggling and having a good time. Yeah. And the man. So, okay, let's bridge that to presence.
Yeah.
right? First off, let's define, how would you, Alana, as a woman, define presence? And you did a beautiful job of sharing at the very beginning what happens for you when presence is not present.
Yes,
when you're opening yourself to a man who just isn't present, what that feels like. It feels like falling into an abyss of hell.
Yeah,
pretty much. So how would you then define presence?
It's when someone has this like focused listening and attention. And there's an unattachment to the outcome. There's an unattachment to the result. We're not off in the past or in the future. We're just like right here. We've let go of attachment to the outcome. And we're just right here. And our heart is open. Our walls are down. Our barriers are down. And we're just being. Mm. To me, that's pretty much the bravest state one could ever be in. Mm. Because it requires you focusing, but also experiencing you're not in control. You have no control of what's going to happen right now. Mm-hmm. Everything's uncertain. You can respond. You're here, but you don't know what the hell's going to happen. And it's, to me, it's a very, we in the movies, we say like Indiana Jones or James Bond. There's a presence about them when, like, let's say James Bond, the boat blows up. He's like, don't worry. I'll turn my watch into a helicopter. And he's like, cool. Right. Yeah. And away he goes. There isn't a reaction. There's something between what happened and his response. There's a space.
Yeah.
Viktor Frankl talks about it in Man's, you know, search for meaning. Search for meaning. It's that space. So that space to me is presence. We're here. Can't control shit, but we can respond. We have our own back no matter what happens out there.
You know what I'm struck by those comparisons, James Bond, Indiana Jones, boy, we're dating ourselves here with that one. Jason Bourne, you know, Jason Bourne, the Bourne Identity, is one of my favorite characters because the man just, he handles business. He is so in the moment. He's not upset about things. He's just like, oh, this is happening. Okay. This is how I'll handle it.
Right.
And what I notice about those comparisons is death is present.
Oh, yes.
Like
yes.
The overwhelming, you know, the boat blows up or, you know, Indiana Jones being hunted by a heart eating cannibal. Jason Bourne is about to get his head shot off death is present. And for the vast majority of men, death ain't present.
But death of control.
Not in the overwhelming way, not in the obvious way, I should say.
Yeah, but if their worth is based on her approval and she disapproves, that's a death of his ego, which is why intimacy is such a strong, is what I do on the planet. Because if he doesn't have his own back and any of his worth or safety is outside in, that moment of presence will feel like death.
Yeah. I remember a woman told me once, so we were friends. Ish, we were more acquaintances, I suppose, for a few years, and then we dated very briefly. But in our dating, in the time that we dated, she shared something with me that I'll never forget. And she told me, Brian, when I first met you, and we would spend time, or we might talk at an event or something, she said, I didn't trust you because you were always looking around.
Ah, there you go. Yeah.
You were always looking around. You never really with me. You never really looked at me.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking back about that, like, holy shit, she is so right. I was so not, I was talking to her, but I remember I would be looking around I'm not even sure what I was looking for. Maybe another woman, maybe just to see what else is going on here. Maybe just, I don't know.
Yeah.
But her giving me that feedback is unforgettable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that stays with me today, that I know that, like, just that subtle movement in where my attention is and goes in a conversation is communicating a lack of presence, at least to a woman. So let's talk practically. How do you as a woman know when a man, or at least how do you discern, how do you feel when a man is not present? What does that look like in his body, in his being, in his, like, what does that look and sound like?
Yeah, definitely. It's what you said about the darting eyes. Mm-hmm. He doesn't look at her, let alone into her. He's looking, he's gracing by her and checking everything else out. Mm-hmm. He'll be fidgety in his body. Not that he needs to be this robot bug-eyed and stare at her, but there will be a shifting of energy. He's not in his balls. He's not in his thighs like the trunks of a tree. He's not rooting his energy down into the center of the earth like an Aikido master who you can't push over when they really send their energy down into the earth. He's not taking up space here, and he doesn't, which feels like protection. That feels like protection, allows us to soften. There's an energetic field that he puts out when he's like this in his body and in the earth. And this is who I am. Take it or leave it. He's not trying to prove anything. He's not trying to do bravado. He's not hiding from fear of rejection. He's just in the center, right? It feels like there's this wave that comes off where, I don't know, it's like it just softens the whole front of my body. And it just like opens me like a flower. So that's one piece. There's another way he will look that I can also sense. Now, I'm super sensitive. This is my job. This is my superpower. I can sense maybe more than most women, but still all women I talk to notice the shoulders are up and then the shoulders come down. The chest is slightly caved. Oh, the chest opens, the breasts lift, the giggles begin. Like we can feel the safety in his energy, his posture rooted in the earth. He's with us. Next, I have a video about this I shot years ago. Penetrate her in three ways or something like that, I think I called it. And the idea is when you're present, I encourage men to notice that old way of saying body, mind, spirit and flip it. Spirit, mind, body. Because when a man, okay, let's say he's present, he's not darting his eyes around, he's in his body, he's rooting down to the center of the earth, but he leads first with body. It's going to feel like leading first with genital energy. It's going to feel like, oh, he just wants in my pants. Oh, he just sees me like a piece of meat. Mm-hmm. If he only penetrates with the energy of his cock, that even if he's super present, it'll still feel scary.
Yeah.
Now, if he only in that state of presence only penetrates us with his heart energy, we might go, oh, I feel safe. And he's going to open my heart with his heart energy. Our heart energies are connecting. So it might be that he's really aware of my essence, my purpose on the planet, my radiance, something that awakens in him because of me. I can feel his heart, but that's not enough to make me open all the way, just the heart. It's often a man that will come only from the heart that feels like a kind of a wet fish handshake. Mm. Like his heart is really there, but I don't feel his balls. Mm. I don't feel this, like he sees stuff.
Yeah.
So it's important. It's required, but on its own, not enough. Cock energy on its own, slimy. So I'm trying to add these three, penetrate her three ways together, right? But now we go to the eyes. Body, mind, spirit. Spirit, mind, body. See my spirit first. Look into my eyes, not just to me, but into me. Penetrate me with your eyes. See beyond what I'm saying. See, then the heart feel, and then the cock claim. You put all those together. Where you're seeing my spirit, you're honoring my intelligence or my mind, you're penetrating my heart, you're noble. I can feel your kindness. And my God, you want to claim me, and I'm not going to surrender to anybody that doesn't check those boxes. It's like, whew, take me now. It allows every part of my femininity to feel seen, honored, safe, so that we can move into the state of cherished, treasured, devotion, rapture, these areas.
Now, that's beautiful. I'm with you 1,000%. You know, the man who penetrates only with his with sort of a sexual presence is going to appear likely to be, well, like already violating in his energy to many women. Yeah. The man who leads with just the heart energy can feel like a guy that I can just push him over with the tip of my finger.
Yeah.
Like that's not sexy either. But that's all very poetic and beautiful, and I'm with you. I can hear right now the thoughts of the man out there listening to this. You know, I have a course for men called Elevate Your Relationship. We got right now, we've got almost 20 men going through this 6-month program.
Fantastic.
And it is fantastic. I mean, men talking about relationships and doing deep relational work is a beautiful thing. Yeah. And a lot of these men are just, they've either hit bottom in their relationships, or they're just, it's like they just realize I'm clueless. I don't know how to do this. Help me. And so how would you teach a man
to do that,
to do what you just shared?
Yeah. Yeah. This is so perfect. This is why I'm an intimacy expert, because I always start from the inside out. So if you can't see you, you can't see her. If you can't feel you, you can't feel her. If you're not at peace with your own sexuality, if there's any shame or taboo or rejection of the past, you can't be with her sexuality. You can't connect. So the inside always creates the outside. Mm. So I have a lot of different exercises about integrating anger in a healthy way, connecting with what I call little you inside your own heart, who you might have avoided or abandoned, because, you know, it's not, boys don't cry and we don't feel, you know, fear. Mm-hmm. And so there's a disconnect of compassion or empathy with our own selves, with a man's mm-hmm. own self, that needs to be reconnected. Mm-hmm. And a practice of in seeing, is he only seeing what he does wrong and being critical of himself all the time? Or does he actually champion himself?
Yeah.
Actually encourage himself? Does he say, you know, well, even though we still showed up, yeah. right? You showed up. That's a win. As far as I'm concerned, who cares if you fell flat on your face? You showed up. How many just sit on the couch? So to see oneself this way, to have one's own back, to say, even though you're humiliated, I will not leave you, forsake you, or abandon you. I will have your back until you're ready to trust me again, big me, and we are one, and we execute, penetrate the world with who we are.
Pause here for a second, because this is, I think, really huge. So I see this, a man who is stuck in his own shame.
Yeah, yeah.
Who, I love how you, the words you used, who, let's say, who can't champion himself.
Yeah.
So there's the man who's stuck in his own shame. There's, on the other side, there's the man who's stuck in his own grandiosity.
Oh, well, that's just insecurity, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. on the other side, it's still... Yeah. Either case, it's all about him.
Yes.
The man in his shame is about what a bad person he is, or what a fuck up he is, or what a I just can't get anything right. He's in his own shame story. Of course, on the other side is the grandiosity. And these are good dance partners. You know, a lot of men might slam. I think, you know, in my past, I would slam between shame and grandiosity. The shame of, oh man, I fucked up. God damn it, I can't deal with my own shame and blah blah blah. And then if I was with a girlfriend who wasn't skillful with me in there, which was always or never skillful, I would eventually slam into grandiosity. Like, fuck you. You're the one that fucked this up. You know, et cetera. So it'd go from shame, you know, one down to one up. Like Terry Real calls that, like, one down to one up.
Yeah.
And in either case, I can't be with her. I'm just mired in my own shit.
Correct. You're not even at home in yourself.
I'm in a world of my own hurting. Yeah. Whatever it looks like. Yeah. And I love the language that you use, like the developing the capacity to, okay, be with what's going on for me, not dismiss it. Not that the grandiose part of me dismisses it, you know, wants to focus on her fuck up. Whereas the shamed part of me just wants to live in my fuck up.
Yeah. Not forgive oneself.
Forgive myself. But developing the relationship to, I suppose, my these parts of myself, or and still being able to champion myself, acknowledge, okay, but I'm still here.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I did this thing, or yes, this is, you know, it's a shit. We're in a shit show right now, but you know what? I'm fucking here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not going anywhere.
I love that you're bringing out these, I'll call them polarities or dualities. One of the ways I've been trained is quantum psychology, spiritual technology, these experiential processes that create integration. Mm-hmm. Because this is like a ping pong you're explaining right now. The shame, the lack of forgiveness, the seeking worth from the outside in so you can one up and win the argument and blame the other. These are back and forth, back and forth. Presence is when they're integrated in the middle. Presence is like the kiss of grace. So there's these processes there's many processes. I've developed actually 10 Alana Pratt Method processes, but the one that's coming to mind right now is, instead of, like, we have emotions, but we're not our emotions. We have thoughts, but we're not our thoughts. Who's the one that notices the thought? That's the real you, right? Yeah. So you have these things. So it's like one level of witnessing and feeling into the part that's so ashamed, not at a 9 out of 10. This is another reason why people stay stuck in shame or stuck in blame. They process incomplete. 80%, 90%, but what you resist persists. And this is all science. I'm a total geek. I interview all the quantum physicists because I want to get what I intuitively know. Like, why does this actually work? When you feel into the shame, but you just dip your toe in 20%, or you feel it and you really get depressed for a couple of weeks, 80%, but you don't fully match it. You don't fully duplicate it. You don't fully get yourself. You don't fully acknowledge and validate, hey, little guy, you have every right to feel this way, right? If you don't fully do that, it grows. And same with the grandiosity or the wanting one up. On some level, you feel like a shit. You feel guilty that you're doing that. You know that you're being an insecure little high school, right? But you don't know what else to do because you're sourcing your worth from the outside in. So when you feel that with compassion, I'm being an ass right now, and I'm being a total superior, insecure dude who's trying to get his power from the outside in. And I have compassion. I'm doing my best. And I'm going to feel this fully. And I'm going to acknowledge I have every right to feel this because of how I was raised. And I'm just trying to survive. And Lisa didn't kill myself and I didn't hit her. And come on, like you just feel that fully. You feel both of them fully back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And then I get them to feel them together. Doesn't happen on the first try, usually, but you do this process that I take them through. And I swear, Brian, magic occurs. They integrate. They're no longer at war with themselves on the inside. They've come to, and in this state of presence is wisdom, courage, not strength. Courage, any idiot can hit their head against the wall. That's strength. Courage is an open heart. That's a different story. So it's awareness, it's wisdom, it's courage, and it's healthy humility, where you can, going back to the beginning of this conversation, own your shit 100% without justification. Because if your worth is still based on looking good, being right, being safe, getting, controlling any of that, you can't fully own it. But when you've integrated this and you have kind of brought home little ashamed Alana, little bravado Alana, and everybody's home and everybody's in presence, you're whole. You're not perfect. No one's ever going to be perfect, but you're whole. So there's nothing to justify. There's no excuses to give. You don't need to be one-upping anybody, nor do you need to apologize for your existence. And you just own your shit. And you create the space because there's no little tendrils, no little agenda or strategies. Oh, you better apologize now because I went first. You're just whole. You don't need them to do anything to be. And that creates this spacious energy for another to go, oh, you know, you're right. I'm so sorry. I was a real ass. Please forgive me. How can I make up for the damage done? What new agreement can we put into place to support ourselves next time? You awaken the best in another by awakening the best in yourself.
That's beautiful. In a session the other day, so we had a group of men, probably 10 men in this session online. And there was a man who, classic man's man, works in the oil fields, and just, he's new to all this relationship, even personal growth work. I mean, I love this guy because he just talks like a dude. He there's no pretty language on what he doesn't use any jargon. He's just like, man, this shit just fucking kills me. Like, I just I've been in a fight with my wife for 2 weeks and we're not talking to each other. And he shared something, I think it was just yesterday or the day before, a couple of days ago in our session. He said, I realized I shared with my wife. I just said, I did try to hurt you the other day. I did, and I was hurt, and you're right. The thing that I did try to hurt you, and I'm sorry.
Wow.
Even just us men on the call, like for me, that was chilling.
Yeah, wow.
It was just chilling, and I told him, I said, man, just man to man, my experience of trust in you just shot up.
Totally, yeah, and it will in her as well. It has to.
We spent a good 30 minutes unpacking that and what that meant, and it was just profound to hear him just own it. What I loved about it is I didn't hear him apologizing for his existence, as you point out. It was just owning owning his role in their breakdown.
Yes,
just a humble I'm sorry. And that's all it was. And whoa, even in my, I'm not even in relationship to this guy, but I felt more connected to him.
Yes.
He felt more trustable to me.
Yes.
He just landed. As if he just landed in his body in that moment.
That's another way of being present. He's not resisting himself. He's not resisting the moment. He's totally owning it without apology or without self-condemnation. heart open, direct communication. It awakens the best in others. It's being a leader. That's how we leave a legacy. If we can be some version of that presence as we go through our days, then when we rest our head at night, we're proud of ourselves.
Yeah.
We did our best.
It was beautiful. Another question. Yeah. What would you say to the frustrated man who insists he's being present, at least more often than not? He insists, I listen, I'm here, I show up. You know, I had this experience. It was one of my favorite stories to tell. It's actually not my experience. It's one of my closest friends' experiences where years ago he was having problems in his marriage, and him and his wife were sitting on the couch talking about their relationship. You know, 45 minutes in to the conversation, she says, you know, I just don't feel connected to you. And he sort of takes a moment to consider what's going on here. He looks around, right? He notices, well, like, I'm in this room with you. We're talking about our relationship.
Yeah.
I come home to you. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah. You don't feel connected to me. Similarly, well, first off, what does presence have to do with connection? And what would you say? Because I know that's a common complaint that men hear, the feedback. I don't feel connected to you. Mm. Yeah. What does presence have to do with connection? And well, why don't we start there?
Yeah. So remember how I was saying penetrate her three ways. So it's very possible that his heart is closed, his libido, sexual energy is turned off, and he's just looking with his chin up, eyes at her. And he's hearing the words. And he's in the room, and he's come home from work, and he's doing all of that. But the reason why she didn't say, you're not looking at me. She didn't say that. She said, I don't feel connected.
Yeah.
So that's the clue right there, that mm-hmm. this isn't about the part of presence, which is a part of it, which is your eyes aren't darting around. You're actually there, and you're actually listening to her words. But we can listen with our ears, or we can listen with our heart. We can listen with our gut, our soul, pre-thought, right? So if a man is not in his body, he's quote unquote doing all the right things from the file folder in his head and his brain. Right. He's doing all the right things, but he's not even home in his body. So he's not feeling himself. So he can't feel her. And maybe whenever we need to talk, or we're in the therapist's office, or we're out for dinner, maybe in the past, when his heart was open and he was a little guy, he got blindsided with some cruelty, or he got abandoned, and he just decided, well, being present in my heart, not going to go there again. Okay. I'll just do it with my eyes. Yeah. And then I'll just do it with my cock when I want to get laid or I'm horny or something. Yeah. But he just doesn't know how to integrate the owie that's still unresolved, unhealed in his heart. Yeah. And when he does that, he'll learn that he's actually, the pain can make him stronger. Any of the mad, sad, shame, all that kind of stuff that stays stuck inside the heart, when integrated, actually makes you stronger, braver, more courageous, able to have your own back and be with, oh my God, I can feel she's sad. I can feel she's mad, and I don't need to go anywhere. I don't need to take it personally. I don't need to fix it. I can just burn in my own fire, sit in my own fire and just be. That'll allow her to feel connected. Because she's probably expressing, if she's in a therapist setting or whatever, she's expressing her unhappiness. That's not going to feel good.
Yeah.
And if you can feel it and open your heart into compassion for yourself, compassion for her, she'll feel you. She'll feel heard. Feel heard. Not just with the ears.
Yeah.
Feel heard. And that's hard. But it's possible, and it's what allows a woman to feel connected. You can even look at her and say nothing, and she'll feel connected if the heart is open.
Right. Yeah.
And the gut is like, okay, I'm in my body. I'm in my soul. I'm in my hips. I'm right here.
Yeah. I think, this friend, I know that he was actively abused as a child.
There you go.
And he's shared that he's hypervigilant in the world. Any slight potential for danger or threat, walls up, dukes out.
Yep, I get it.
And my story is the opposite. I would say I was really neglected as a child. Not egregiously slow. So, I mean, in the sense I had all the material things a kid needed. What I didn't have was parents actively checking in to see how am I feeling?
Yes.
Or comforting me. I don't recall ever. I recall being comforted twice in, you know, the first 17, 18 years of my life, two times.
God. Okay. Just let me let that land. Cause I'm a mother.
Yeah.
There's nothing more fulfilling for my soul than soothing my child. And I know that when I just couldn't handle it, and I would maybe tell him to have a timeout, is really because I needed a timeout. Mm. I didn't have the capacity. Mm-hmm. So I have compassion, but I also just have, I have a lot of compassion for you.
Thank you. Well, I was soothed on two occasions. Once, one by my father, the night he left our home for good when I was 4 years old. I remember that. And the second time when a cousin committed suicide, I was probably maybe 12. And I remember again, sitting on my dad's lap in the car when he told me and just bawling my eyes out. Like those were the two times I recall being comforted as a child. So, you know, in my adult intimacy, opening my heart has been scary, not even scary. Just it's been, I just learned at a young age, I can't rely on anybody for emotional connection, really.
Yeah.
Or comfort. So, you know, I'm self-sufficient. I've learned to self-soothe.
Right.
And I think, you know, I think these two extremes exist for most men. We were either actively abused in some very clear and painful fashion by a father, mother, maybe both, or somebody, maybe a neighbor, but some way that, like you said, we were taught, don't, you know, an open-hearted boy, especially, not safe.
Yeah. Right.
Close down.
Yeah.
Or we were just so neglected, so just lacking emotional checking in from parents, emotional validation, all of those things, such that we learned, okay, also, well, you know, being an open-hearted kid who feels things, well, nobody's gonna hold me there. So shut it down is much safer.
Yes.
And now I go into an intimate relationship and holy shit, you know, especially again in a heterosexually, you know, for me, it's always been women. And like, even my wife, we're 7 years together and still working through, you know, her desire to comfort me, to nurture me, to give me all of the love that she has to give. And that part of me that resists it because it can be overwhelming. I'm not used to it. I also don't trust it.
Sure.
You know, working through that has been lifelong and massive. And my partner has been an amazing teacher for me in this, and very patient and also communicating at times her hurt, you know. She ain't the first woman who said to me, why don't you just let me love you? Like what? Mm. You know, and so we're pointing at something here that I think is so, again, I have such compassion for men in relationships. I know we have done and do awful things. I know, again, not to excuse it, but I have great compassion. I mean, in many ways, we're set up to fail.
Yeah.
We are set up to fail.
Yeah.
So what do you say to, let's say, the frustrated man who is in that place of either feeling aggrieved, like who heard what we're saying now, is like, yeah, I'm set up to fail. How dare anyone expect me to succeed, right? That guy who just feels aggrieved and is like, fuck this. Mm. Or the guy who is like, I am present. I do show up. I do all the right things. And still she's not happy.
Yeah.
You know, still she doesn't feel connected to me. What do you say to that man?
So the frustrated man that's just like, you know, screw it. First thing I would say would just be this compassion. That yes, the system is setting you up to fail, but you're on the planet to change the system. So have compassion for that little guy and acknowledge that he's right. That did happen and he did the best he could to survive. Nothing's wrong, no mistakes, nothing to justify. It's just like, yes, got it. Now I'm going to evolve that little guy into the present moment. And I'm going to create, if that was true before, what's true for me now? Okay. And I'm not going to be the victim of my circumstances. I'm not going to give my power away to the past or to anybody else. I'm going to take my power back and I'm going to create a world and find people first with myself to trust myself, open my heart to myself. That's going to make him feel safe and secure inside of his body. When his heart is open, he can hear his intuition, his instincts. When his heart is closed, he can't. When his heart is open, it turns on the best of his brain. He's going to be clever and make great decisions and be aware. When his heart is closed, it goes into fight or flight or freeze. He's going to make stupid decisions. Okay. So it's his job to open his heart to him so he can be in his superpower and start to ask questions like, so what is it going to take to find people that I can trust? Because I trust me. Right. And create a whole new world and not be the victim of your circumstances and go, maybe I've been put on the planet to change this trajectory for humanity and do his part. That's what I would say to that part. And then the one who's like, look, I'm being present and she's still complaining. I would acknowledge again first, always start with acknowledgement. Yes, you are. And really go through everything that he is doing. So that part of him feels heard, validated. And then go, now let's see what else is possible. How's your heart in the moment of presence? How are your hips in the moment of presence? Are you in your body? Are you feeling you as you're feeling her? A lot of couples that I work with, they leave themselves, connect with the other to try to calm them down, get approval, or they're just being generous. They just love them, right? Yeah. But they've left themselves. So to me, wholeness is when you can simultaneously stay in your own self, feel your own feelings, have your own back, while simultaneously connecting with another, and that figure eight loop begins. And a lot of people leave themselves and don't feel their feelings anymore. And they're all the way out there kind of manipulating and fixing and learning and being curious. But that lets the other person not feel felt because you've left yourself. So it's a new skill of connection to self, connection to others. Literally in my retreats, I give them these little dowels, these little sticks of wood. And I say, okay, before you're going to connect with self. Now connect with the other. And then I say, let's feel one of you dominating and the other one receiving. Okay. And then they have a little chat about what that was like.
Are they using these sticks? Like they're putting them against their body?
No, they're using them. But this is my nail file, but this is so this is like the dowel and each person will put two little fingers and they'll be connected like this.
Oh, on opposite ends of the stick.
Opposite ends of this dowel. So they're standing facing one another.
Got it. Yeah.
So before they do that, I say, first connect with yourself, feel your feet on the floor, open your heart, be connected to you, stay there. And now connect to the other. And then one dominates. Let's see what that's like. The other one receives. And the other, now let's switch. Dominate, receive. Dominant, submissive. And now nobody dominate, nobody receive. Let's see what can arise between the two of you.
Yeah.
And it's a third energy. It's what I call going from soulmate to, I call it in my company, heartmates, because that's my app, heartmates, but like a whole relationship. I'm whole, you're whole. We're together. I can awaken something in you that's dormant. You can awaken something in me that's dormant. We can actually be more together. Not just one and one is two, but one and one is like infinity. When we both stay connected to self, which means doing this inner work we're talking about, staying connected to you, forgiving yourself, championing yourself, honoring yourself, asking questions of what else is possible, all of this inner work. When you can be that, something magical occurs in a relationship. And it still astounds me what's possible.
When
we're willing to shift from you complete me to you compliment me.
I love that. That's beautiful. What do you say to the frustrated man who's like, I already do this shit. I'm so present. I'm here. I'm in. I'm like, and she's still not, it just doesn't work.
I would question if it's actually true, if he's just doing it from his head, not his heart or his hips. And if not, then I would ask another kind of strange question. I was like, what do you love about that? What's the payoff? What are you getting out of complaining about this? What do you not have to feel or face by being so frustrated and blaming her all the time? This next level of ownership of, well, maybe there is more growth for me, or maybe facing, wow, I've come as far as I can go on this sacred contract and I need to complete this relationship and I don't want to be alone again. So I'll just stay here and complain about it. Something's up. If a man is truly on the conscious path, he's not a complainer. That's incongruent. Right. So he's getting a payoff from the frustration and the blame. And so I would look either within himself or within the relationship and just make that safe space to go, hey, what truth are you not willing to face and feel right now? I won't judge you. I'm right here. I got you. Let's drop in. What's true?
Oh, it gives me chills. I love that. It's so beautiful because it is, I think intimate relationship If we men accept the challenge, it calls us to our greatness.
Yes.
And we do not find our greatness in blaming our partner for our experience.
No.
It gives me chills because I just love that.
Yeah. I'll say one last thing that I'm present to, if I could. Remember I talked about the subconscious running the show, even though our conscious is thinking we're doing it all right. It could be that his body, his unconscious hypervigilance, like that friend of yours abused since like little, is so used to being blamed by the other that he's attracted a partner that just keeps that cycle going, that confirms, see, I'm not good enough. I was never good enough. I'm not safe. I'll never be safe. I can't trust. I'll never be trusted. I can't be held. It could be. And that awareness could allow him to forgive her. He's just attracted his mom or his dad or whoever. And then he could bless and release her with gratitude as opposed to condemn and fight and have a big blow up. There could be forgiveness across the board.
Beautiful. Just a few more questions. We have women listening. What do you say to women who want their man to be more present, who are desperate to feel connected to him? You know, one thing that I'm often wanting women and men for that matter to really understand that you can't get your partner. I hear that language. How do I get him to be more present? How do I get him to whatever? And my initial thought or sometimes response is you can't get him to do anything he doesn't willingly want to do, because if you could, you wouldn't respect him and he wouldn't respect himself.
Totally. Yeah.
But what do you say to that woman who's just dying for her man to be more present and just doesn't know how?
Yeah. First, I always start with acknowledgement because it feels empty or scary or lonely or what have you. So first acknowledge where she's coming from, that her desire is beautiful. She wants connection. To notice that she's giving her power away till he does it, till she's okay on the inside. So notice he's the source of her safety or happiness. If he's doing something different, I'll feel better. And that is a recipe for disaster for anyone. So first I would say, go in and connect with yourself. Everything that you're seeking from him, give him a break, give him some space. Nobody's going to want to do anything for you, as you just said, if you're going to manipulate them, right? And so give him some space, connect with yourself. Anybody that can't be at peace in their aloneness is always going to be manipulating others to get their attention. And that's not a fun person to live with. So first do all the inner work to connect with herself. Then from fullness, invite, welcome, allure, be coy, be compassionate, be caring. There's a reason why he's not connecting. Is something going on at work? Is something going on with the kids? Is something going on with money? Is something something's going on that he's not connected to himself? How could you get up under him? How could you support him? How could you have compassion for him? One of my clients, it was a different issue, not about connection. It was about not drinking. She didn't like how much she was drinking, but all of her judgment around it wasn't working. Her threatening to leave wasn't working. Mm-hmm. When I got her, I integrated all of her fear because the young boys are now experiencing dad inappropriately behaving at parties, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Integrate back into home. And then I went into her intuition, her gut, her yoni, her instincts. And I said, truth, what does he need? And she said, he needs men, good men. Mm. I go, great. And so I go, who do you know? And then instantly there it was, somebody's at yoga's husband. I go, great. Invite, inspire, suggest, wouldn't it be cool if we had a dinner party with that couple? And then she created the stage. And then lo and behold, hey, I'm going to go for a run with George tomorrow. And she's like, that'd be great. I wonder, have you ever considered a men's group? Because I have a woman's group. And then, oh my God, now there's four guys hanging out once a week. And his drinking is calming down. It's not done, but he's got who he needs, right? So we women, we're wise. We're the inspirer. We're the creative intuition. But not when we're needy, seeking to change them. When we're whole, connected, inviting and wise, and then inviting and alluring.
Beautiful. I love it. So Alana, I guess we'll wrap up. This has been, I have a few more questions though. I'm experimenting with some new closing questions. The first one though, I want to ask is, okay, you and I have just had, I think a beautiful and profound conversation. By the way, I love how our conversations have evolved over the years. I think we're coming up on 10 years now.
I think so. Yeah.
Eight, 10 years. And I got to say, I have aged impressively aged. Like I look so much older. I don't know what you're doing. You haven't aged at all. And nothing wrong with aging. I love aging. Nothing wrong with it. I'm just like, wow, you look as beautiful and radiant as ever.
Thank you.
You know, I reflect back to some of our earlier conversations. God, I was such a novice. I remember some things that I know, but I feel like, you know, look, I'm always my own worst critic. And I think back to, you know, I think being on one of your podcasts probably 8 years ago, 8, 10 years ago already. And I remember some of the things that I said. God, I was like, God, what an idiot. I had no idea.
Never, never.
Well, you're kind. I love though, you know, through our own mutual life experience and our own evolution, like I see the richness and nuance of our conversations has just the depth with which we can go is, I love it. I value it. And I'm just honored that we get to do this on my podcast now. So,
thank you.
So we've had this beautiful conversation. What is one key insight from all that we've shared? Like what is the one key insight you would want our listeners to take from this? Let's say we could even ask it this way. Like what's the one thing that you think men need to know or learn to create and maintain a truly fulfilling intimate relationship?
To recognize that you are her, she is you. And by that, I mean, whatever is annoying you about the other, where is that lack of connection happening inside of you? Where are you annoyed with yourself? Where are you not connected with yourself? To really put down the blame. Put down the try to control them. I'll be happy when they change. Mm-hmm. Let it go. See that as an inspiration to do your own inner work. That'll make you respectful. That'll give her space to do the work. That inner connection will then holographically, energetically projected outwardly in that way of connecting. Communications will change, energy will change, presence will change, heart connection will change because you've changed. Worst case scenario, if you do the work and she doesn't change, your sacred contract is done. No harm, no foul. Best case, you do the work, you've invited her. And then even better, she does the work too and you both invite each other. Like that's what it's really about.
Yeah.
That's what I want them really to get is they are powerful. They hold all the power to create change within them. They are not the victims of anyone or anything ever. Two, plug for your book. Read your book. My last relationship, once a week, we did a chapter. Mm-hmm. The relationship didn't work out, didn't finish the book with him, but but it's a great structure to get talking about things with a third person. Not you didn't do that. And Ryan says, like, it's a wonderful tool in your relationship to go deeper and have guidance on that. I love your book.
Thank you. The choose her every day or leave her. Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that plug. And I know that's sincere. I remember you sharing with me that you and your partner were doing that. And that's inspiring to me. Thank you. Okay. Last thing I'm going to do, and I'm experimenting again, is a little experiment. And I just find it fascinating and so appropriate that I am beginning this with a woman. I want to explore just briefly your five core emotional triggers. What I mean by this is, I know a lot of us men, we don't feel safe having emotions, being angry, being sad, even feeling joy or fear or shame or embarrassment. So I want to start, I think, again, this is an experiment. You're willing to experiment with me to play with me and of course, lead the way for us men into, you know, being okay with our emotions.
Yeah.
It's a simple prompt. And we're going to go through the sort of the five core emotions. And here's the simple prompt. What makes you mad?
What makes me mad?
Yeah.
About a man being in a relationship with a man?
No, about anything. It could be about anything. It could be that the garbage man takes my recycling and puts it in the garbage. I don't know anything.
I think what makes me mad is like a betrayal. Like we created an agreement. We created trust. We were in this together. And then you just don't follow through. You drop me, you lie, you blame me. You just don't hold on to your side of the bargain. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. What makes you sad?
What makes me sad is seeing somebody and this is me probably like as a coach too, where I can see if they would just turn towards themselves, we could begin the healing process. But they are so not willing to forgive themselves. They're so not willing to feel. They're just la, 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 la. And they're in their own purgatory, their own self-made prison. I can't get in. Their wife can't get in. Nobody can get in. Their kids can't get in. And they're just so unwilling to cradle and cocoon themselves. They push themselves away and everybody else away. Yeah, that's devastating.
Yeah, I feel that. What gives you joy?
Glitter, lip gloss, vibrators, wine, sunsets, animals, horses. Yeah. I live on 15 acres now with 9 horses. It's just so fun. Life, creativity, adventure, connection, being alive, savoring life, pleasure.
I love it. I remember being envious of one of my sisters when I was a teenager. I remember walking through a mall with her and she saw a pair of yellow socks for sale and she got so excited. And I remember thinking, God, I wish I could feel so excited about yellow socks. I've never forgot that. And I can. But you know, I never felt safe. It felt too much. It felt too big. It felt too inappropriate. All those.
Yeah.
So thank you. I love that. I love your answer. What causes you to feel fear?
When I can't trust somebody, they're not present. They're not in their heart. They're out to get. I can feel that they're not in their noble, doing the right thing when nobody's looking place. Because I'm either going to get hurt. Someone's going to get hurt. Something's going to happen. I can feel they're not in their body. They're disconnected. It means their ego's running the show. Heaven forbid a nasty entity gets in there. Like something's going to go down. It's almost like I can see red in their eyes. And that's terrifying.
Yeah. Thank you. And finally, what causes you to feel shame or embarrassment, you know, embarrassed or just you want to hide from the world?
When I can't figure out why I failed, why I made a mistake. Like if I can figure it out, I have compassion, I can be with myself, I can learn, I can grow, I can make up for the damage done and off I go. But when I can't access the core, I feel stupid, I feel broken, I feel humiliated. Like since we last had our last interview, the last relationship ended in physical abuse and there's a criminal jury trial. Like it's not pretty. Man. It's not pretty. And I couldn't figure out, Brian, why I couldn't make him stop hitting me. And I couldn't figure out why I didn't leave. And what I've discovered in the most recent therapy I've been going through, PSIs since I saw you last, psychedelic somatic integration, was this level 4 trauma girl from that first fist through the wall and many other things that happened. She was hypervigilantly finding the next abuser to survive. That's all she knew. The body, the unconscious, not the conscious girl who's got all these certifications and helps all these people, not her, like the subconscious, unconscious. And when I started going through this therapy, which you surrender and you let the body recapitulate the abuse from level 4 back to level 3, 2, 1, and 0, and you witness your own abuse, you witness your body recapitulating, replaying the abuse. When I saw her, this, and my voice would be really little, like really young, when I could finally go, oh, that's why you stayed. Because when you were little, you stood in front of daddy so he wouldn't hit mommy. Oh, that's why you don't go anywhere. And that's why you keep seeking them. And I could have compassion for her. Then the shame dissolved. The forgiveness happened. The forgiveness for him. Everything's okay now. So for me, shame is when we can't shine a light on the darkness and we stay stuck there. But we can heal the shame when we do processes with you, with me, with other practitioners, where we can go back and find those unconscious, shameful, dark places, shine a light and do the work.
Alana, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence and your wisdom and your insight. I trust that this conversation will serve many men and the women listening as well. Thank you so much again.
Thanks for having me. All my love to you, my brother.
Thank you so much for listening, and thank you again to my old friend, Alana Pratt. Remember to check out Alana's course, Becoming the One, at alanapratt.com/become-intro. It's Alana with 2 L's and 1 N, 3 A's, I just realized, Pratt, PRATT.com/becomeintro. Use discount code my name, Brian, for a discount. Also, my Elevate 2025 year-long coaching program for men is now open for applications. We've only got 10 spots, and this will fill up. Go to brianreeves.com/elevate to learn more and apply now. brianreeves.com/elevate. I'm your thriving life and relationship coach, Brian Reeves, Brian with a Y, Reeves. Until soon, keep your head up, your breath relaxed, and your thoughts inspired.